against Williams. Shoots another three. Buries it! Auburn up by 10 in the basketball. Brown, crossover. Free throw line. Kicks it over to Dunbar. Launches a three from the right side. Good! Malik Dunbar, and it's a 13-point Auburn lead. Bone penetrates. Out of control. Deflected. Auburn another steal. Okiki ahead to Harper. To Brown for three. Got it!
Oh, my goodness.
Got it!
What a play!
21-point Auburn lead!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone Podcast. The champions, John, the champions. They are the champions of the Southeastern Conference, the Auburn Tigers, 2019 SEC Tournament Champions. What do you think?
It was awesome. It was a wonderful weekend and a great day on Sunday, enjoying that game, and really one of the most joyful, fun experiences an Auburn fan in a long time, and one of the funnest single basketball experiences ever, and absolutely maybe the funnest basketball experience ever.
That was great. That was the best basketball game I've ever watched. When you combine how well the team I was for played against the quality of opponent, what was on the line, a trophy, a championship on the line, a team that was supposed to beat us, that had just beaten Kentucky, when you look at everything altogether, I mean, I asked on Twitter earlier today what would be the football equivalent of that, and I got several good answers, but, you know, probably the one that came the closest was Missouri in the SEC championship game in 2013. But even that game was close right up until the end. And even that game was against Missouri. And yes, I know Missouri had a very good team that year and they were very highly ranked, but it's still Missouri in football in 2013 still didn't carry quite the cachet of Tennessee in basketball in 2019. You know what I mean? I think it was just a little bit too short. If it had been Florida or Georgia that we beat like that in 2013, the SEC championship game, I think that would have been the equal of this in football. What do you think?
That's a good equivalent, I think. The other part is, like, Missouri was good, but I don't think anybody thought they were a serious national title contender. And I think, and this Tennessee team, let's be clear, they lost five games this season.
Yeah.
Two of those games were to us.
That's right. And they were going to be a number one seed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we denied them the regular season share of the championship, and then we denied them the tournament championship. We're like, no, Tennessee, no. You get nothing. You get nothing, Tennessee. Go back to bed. You get no dessert. You get no breakfast. You get no lunch. You get no dinner. Go back. Get away, Tennessee. You get nothing. I don't know what Tennessee did to deserve us being so horrible to them, but we've been cruel.
It's so funny because earlier this week I had a conversation with my parents about how the Tennessee home game to end the season was like the best Auburn home basketball game in, you know, 30 years, probably 40 years. And it was a great game, a great send off for those seniors. That was a big part of it. The arena was really rocking. The students stayed for spring break. And I think that game fed into this game because this team knew they could beat Tennessee. They were confident from the first tip of the ball.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there were two psychological components working. One was that our players knew, didn't think, they knew they could hang with this Tennessee team and beat them because they probably hadn't lost to them in 3 years, you know, or two years, three games, two years. And the other psychological thing I think was, and it's not an excuse on Tennessee's part. I think it's a very legit. It's something I was hoping for. I can't say I was hoping for it to be a factor, and then if it maybe was, I can't then say, oh, it's an excuse, right? I have to own it on both ends. And so I think that there is something to them emotionally exhausting themselves in that war with Kentucky. And I'm glad. we were joking. We wanted to go five overtimes, and it practically did. I mean, it didn't go to overtime, but it was like an overtime game. And I think it really took its toll. And I tell you right now, I was more concerned about our matchup with Kentucky than with Tennessee again, which was proven out, I think, at least halfway with the Tennessee side. And I think we owe, even as we're denying Tennessee everything, we also owe them a bit of thanks for blocking Kentucky from being our opponent. I mean, the way we played, we could have beaten Kentucky. We could. But I would much rather have the known than the unknown. You know what I mean?
Sure. And I agree. I felt much more confident playing Tennessee.
Yeah.
Than against Kentucky. I would not have felt confident at all. And I think as soon as I saw the draw for the SEC tournament and the way it lined up, I felt really good about it. Because we were on the LSU side and their program and team was imploding, I felt like we didn't play well against South Carolina in Columbia, but on a neutral floor, I felt like that was a different game. And so I felt really good about the way the bracket lined up for us, and I saw that Tennessee and Kentucky were on the other side. So it really, the way everything lined up for Auburn was really, really perfect this year. And that doesn't mean that it was easy or whatever, but it just means that, things worked out well, and I'm happy they did. I think, we benefited from the way the bracket lined up. And, Auburn had to play a tough game on Saturday too, but you're right, the Tennessee-Kentucky game was a brutal, tough game, and it was after the Auburn game. So they had like 4 hours less recovery time, too, after that tougher game.
That's true. Yeah, and it's funny how like the memory of the controversy end of the Florida game just kind of evaporated. For 24 hours, that was all anybody could talk about. And then as soon as we played Tennessee, it's gone. Nobody's even that I've seen is even mentioning it. So, and by the way, my take on that, and I'll get your thought, was – if you call the foul on Auburn fouling the Florida guy, he gets a 1-1. But they were down 3, weren't they?
Yes, it wasn't a shooting foul.
No,
I mean, I think Florida fans want to make it he was shooting 3, you should get 3 free throws.
No, it would be a 1-1. And then what are they going to do? They make 1 or they make 2, and then they're still down 1, and we have the ball, and there's 1 second left.
They would make one, and then they would miss the second one on purpose and try and tip it in. That's the scenario.
With 1 second left.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, anyway, the game really was amazing. It's our first – here's a weird thing. It's our first SEC tournament win since 1984-85 when we were in high school. And that year we won the SEC tournament and had to play Kansas in the second round, and we were in the North Carolina bracket. And this year we won the SEC tournament. We will if we beat New Mexico State, which is not a given because they gave us possibly the worst single draw we could have possibly gotten. Thursday morning in Salt Lake City against a team that hasn't lost in 19 games. I mean, there's your reward for winning the SEC tournament, Auburn. You get to play get this, John. We have the second longest winning streak in the country right now, as I understand it. And the only team that has a longer winning streak than us is New Mexico State. And that's who we get to play. And in Salt Lake City, a short drive for people who live in that part of the country.
A city at altitude, and New Mexico State is a university at altitude.
Good gosh. Yeah, so Thursday morning, so less time to acclimate.
Mm-hmm.
We never do well. The football team, but the basketball team, we'll see. Everything about it is lousy. If we win this game, and we can, obviously. I mean, they've played teams like Grand Canyon State or whatever. If we win this game, we will have earned it by overcoming a lot of adversity that's not on the court. Beyond just them being a good team.
That's fair.
Yeah. I take some hope from the fact that the teams that are in the WAC these days are like Grand Canyon State and Fred's School of Mining. it's not like it's BYU and, like in the old days.
So. No, I looked at some the computer rankings to see how they valued New Mexico State, and they say they're the equivalent. They're in the ballpark of Alabama or Arkansas.
Yay! As our first round cupcake.
Yeah, well, I mean those are teams that aren't in the tournament, but
they're good. I mean they're not. They're not sure. Terrible. They're not. They're not. You know they're not cannon fodder.
No, they are not.
And so, you're supposed to get in your first round if you're in the upper part of the bracket a something of a cupcake. And of course, 5-12 is infamous for the upset.
Yes.
Because you usually get in a 5-12 matchup, it's just set up this way. In a 5-12 matchup, you get in the 5 spot a lesser team from a big conference, and in the 12 spot, you get a better team from a little conference, and a better team from a little conference on the right day can beat I'm not saying that's who we are necessarily, but from the outside looking in, if you didn't know better, that's what you'd think. If you didn't know we had just beaten Tennessee twice and won the SEC tournament, you'd say, oh, Auburn, they're like the 5th, 6th best team in a 14-team big league, right? So you'd think, you know, we're like, versus a team that hasn't lost in 19 games. So, well, anyway, another thing I wanted to mention about this is it's just how good is it to see a coach like Bruce Pearl on our sideline? Because we've had some good coaches. Sonny had his run. Sonny had, you know, he was not a bad coach. Sonny had his day. He got us the Elite Eight and won us the SEC tournament. Got us to Sweet 16 a couple of times. Got us NCAA tournament like 5 years in a row. Sonny had his day. But I don't think anybody would say Sonny Smith was, you know, one of those coaches that like a, you know, like a, I don't say like Dean Smith and Bobby Knight, but I mean, you know, there's the coaches that coach basketball and there's the coaches that are icons. And there's something about those iconic basketball coaches that they just seem different when you watch them on television or in the arena. They just seem different. You can tell that these are the masters of the craft of basketball coaching. These are the true blue bloods of coaching. And it's harder to say that in modern days. You could say that in the old days about football, but it's harder today because they move around so much, you know. But back in the day, you know, you'd point in football, you'd point to like a Bear Bryant and a Shug Jordan. You'd point to Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler and Daryl Royal and all those guys, right? And Barry Switzer. I mean, you know the ones that are the blue blood, those Notre Dame coaches, right? Those guys. Basketball has its pantheon, but those guys all share a trait. The Krzyzewskis and what's his name at Kansas and Boeheim at Syracuse, you know, for so long. And those guys all share a trait, which is that they just seem like those iconic head coaches of basketball. Auburn hasn't had somebody like that in ages, if not ever. Bruce Pearl, to me, on the sideline when I'm watching him, he has the ambiance of one of those kind of basketball coaches. Am I crazy?
You're not crazy. I mean, I think, hey, first of all, Bruce Pearl may be the single greatest hire that Auburn has ever had in any sport.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
He took over a program that was so far down and made it into this, where it's a, you know, we're a team that won the SEC one year, won the SEC tournament next year, won 25 games 2 years in a row. We've never done that before. Went to the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row. And the recruiting and the returning players, this team's going to be good again next year, really good.
Yes.
So, he has built this through his energy and his enthusiasm and his charisma and
his ability, just his
and his coaching ability. He has a reputation sometimes, I think, as a guy who just rolls the ball out there and tells him to go. But a lot of what he does is really smart. Mm-hmm. And I think he is a great coach. And we're really, really lucky to have him. And I could tell you, we're going to have to, down the road, I mean, Bruce Pearl loves Auburn, and I'm happy he's here. We're going to have to block that guy up because there's a day that's going to come when some big time school is going to throw a bunch of money at him to try to steal him away. I'm just telling you, it's going to happen.
Back up the Brinks truck. I don't care. I'll write a check for what few pennies I have, man. Lock him up. I have a hard time kind of putting in words that what I was trying to say, and I hope it makes sense to you and everybody listening. But I mean, I just feel like when you look at certain coaches, they say big time basketball coach. Auburn has never really had a big. I mean, Sonny did his thing. Yes, I love Sonny Smith. Was great, but you thought of Sonny as like a good coach doing a good job at an SEC school. You looked at Cliff Ellis, a good coach doing a good job at an SEC school. You looked at some of our other coaches and you go, bad coaches doing bad jobs at an SEC school. You look at Bruce and you think, how is this guy at Auburn? How is this guy like not lined up to be at North Carolina next or at Kansas? I mean, to me, maybe I'm just wrong, but to me, I look at Bruce Pearl and I see a guy that should be next in line for one of the absolute creme de la creme programs. And we've got him. And it's just amazing. I know why. I mean, I know the whole story. But I'm just saying, even still, it's just amazing. It's absolutely amazing to me. And you can see why the Tennessee people, as much as they hate what happened, they still love him too.
Yep, because he's a great guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's like how Auburn people still love Tommy Tuberville. If he came back and took over, like, Georgia or Tennessee and beat us a couple of times, we'd be a little ill, but we'd still love him for being Tubbs, It's just amazing to me that we have a coach that seems like he should be next in line at a major basketball school, and yet he's our coach, and that just makes me very, very happy because I've never seen it before. I'm not saying we don't deserve it. I'm just saying we've never seen it. So, SEC tournament has not been our greatest place to shine. We've had a few runs here and there.
The opposite.
Yeah. I remember there was that long period of time we would lose to Vanderbilt or LSU in the first round every year. I don't know how it played out that way, but we always ended up losing to LSU or Vanderbilt the first round every year. We had that one year, I guess, 84-85. Barkley was already gone, wasn't he? That was a Jeff Moore and Chris Morris and Chuck Person team, I believe.
It was Chuck Person.
Yeah. And then they beat Alabama. I remember that was Sonny beating Wimp in the title game. And that team went on, I guess, to get to the Sweet 16, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then the year that we went to the Elite Eight, we didn't win the SEC tournament. We didn't win the SEC either. That team, I think, that team may have finished second in the SEC, and then Kentucky vacated the title. But it's kind of like the 2004 football team. We were second. The team ahead of us cheated and vacated, but we never claimed it. So we could claim an SEC championship from like 86, 87, somewhere in there. That was the Chris Morris team for sure. That was the year that Kentucky got in trouble because they FedExed a big wad of cash to a player and the envelope busted open on the truck and all the money fell out.
Yep. Chris Mills, I think.
Oh, gosh. Oh, Kentucky. Let's see. We wanted to talk about our matchup. We talked about New Mexico State. What do you know about them other than what we've already talked about? I mean, they're supposed to be pretty good, right? They manhandled everybody in their conference. And it was interesting. I learned that they don't really have one player that scores a ton of points. They have like each player averages about 9 on the whole team.
Yeah, they spread it out like that. It's pretty even. They shoot a lot of threes. But the difference is they're not nearly as good at shooting threes as Auburn is, but they just do it. They shoot a lot of threes. So this is going to be a three-point shooting game. They're not nearly as good defensively as we are. I think that's going to be a big challenge for them.
Turnovers
seeing
and stuff, yeah.
And players that can play defense like Auburn can. So I think the big thing is, if they come out and they're just get lucky as heck and they're on fire from 3-point range, then we're going to have a challenge. But I think Auburn, the perimeter guys we have, can defend them and force them into bad shots. we can create turnovers against them and lead to easy baskets. And I think that's what we're going to do.
By the way, I'd forgotten one of the things I want to mention about Tennessee is not only do we play Tennessee in front of a crowd. I like how it's I think it's Brandon or somebody said I think it was Brandon that said, I went into that arena thinking I was going to see 90% Tennessee fans, and I was wrong. It was 95% Tennessee fans, and I guess they jumped on the Kentucky fans and got their tickets from them like right during the end of that game, and there was no Auburn. There were none left for Auburn because it sold out. We beat them in Tennessee in an overwhelmingly, he said it was like Thompson Bowling Arena being in there. We are forgetting now, because the second half was so amazing, we were like 2-for-13 shooting three-pointers in the first half, and Jared Harper barely played.
Mm-hmm.
If I had told you before that game that we would start the game 2-for-13 three-pointers and Jared Harper would get his second foul 2 minutes in, what would you have said?
Well, I certainly would not have said we'd be up by 9 points at halftime over a top five team. So, no, I would. I mean, I felt like, you know, if given that scenario, we'd probably be down 10 points at halftime.
Yeah. And this was actually a game where we didn't go down like 15 to start the game. It seems like every game we spot the other team like 12, 15 points and then claw our way back out. And in this one, we actually kind of were even with them. I thought the main thing that really showed up in this one was our defense. We turned them over a lot. We shut down their main, you know, their star player. One of, you know, they got several star players, but the number one,
Grant Williams.
Yeah, player of the year. But when our offense wasn't clicking, when we were missing all those 3-point shots, if we had been making those 3-point shots, we'd have been up 25 at halftime. But when our offense wasn't working, we were missing all those shots. They could have pulled away, and we clamped down on them. It was a low-scoring first half because we were missing open shots, but we were preventing them from making shots. And that's the thing you got to do. When your offense is so streaky as ours is, you've got to be able to play good defense and force turnovers to keep the other team from opening up a big lead while you're struggling, because you knew our offense was going to come. It just was going to take a while, and we just didn't need to be down 30, you know, when we start making shots. And so it was a real credit to what great defense they played that we kept it close when we weren't making shots, and then when we started making shots, we were only down like 4, you know, and suddenly we're up 15 or something insane, or 20. And we actually won by 20.
That's right. That's the everybody focuses on the shooting with this team and the offense and all that, but it really is the defense. Like, they play great defense.
Yeah.
They're really good at forcing the other, you know, a lot of bad shots, forcing the other team to, you know, to not be able to get the ball where they want to go with it and get it to their players in a good position. And we make force teams into turnovers. We force them to run out the shot clock. We create turnovers. So it really is the defense that fuels this team and makes them – again, defense doesn't slump. We may have – like you said in the Tennessee game, we may have some bad three-point shooting but for a while. But we keep playing defense like we are, and we're going to be fine.
What do we make – let's just roll the dice and say that we do get past New Mexico State that we talked about. What do we know about Kansas this year? I haven't paid any attention to them. Are they – I mean, I've heard they're not as good as they usually are, but they're still pretty good.
Well, not as good as they usually are is they're not a top four team.
Right, right.
I would say they are in the range where we are. I mean, they're, you know, between whatever, 8 and 15. So they're in that ballpark, I think, with us and a few other teams. This Tennessee team beat them.
Okay.
So in Kansas, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's
so cool. So that shows me that, like, you know, we play our game. I think we could beat them. I honestly haven't seen them a lot this year, so I don't know what kind of matchup they would be for us. But I want to tell you this, though. I was looking at some advanced basketball stats for the game, and I looked at the Sagarin does a ranking of basketball teams. And I tweeted this out right before the show. He has three different rankings, okay? In three different power rankings. Mm-hmm. And one is kind of the traditional one he calls predictor. And then one is based just on scores, and it's called Golden Mean. And he has one that focuses, that does the same statistical analysis, but it prioritizes more recent games. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And it's called Recent, and it's on his webpage. It's green. It's in the right hand column. In that recent ranking, Auburn is the number one team in college basketball.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, we've got the longest winning streak other than the team we're about to play. So,
but no, this is an advanced stats thing where it's based on how we've played against who we've played or whatever. And in that ranking, we're ahead of Duke, North Carolina, Michigan State, Virginia.
That's amazing. So, that's awesome. Well, if they could keep playing like they played during the tournament, and especially obviously on Sunday, and this is not the most brilliant thing I've ever said, obviously, but if we can keep playing like that, we can beat anybody. I don't know that we can. I mean, you can't catch lightning in a bottle every time you go out there, but
no, but there are some teams where there's like, this is as good as we can possibly play. Okay. And there's a limit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And this team, as good as we could possibly play, can beat anybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we played Duke already this year.
That's right.
They didn't blow us out of the building. We stood toe to toe with that team. Absolutely. And that's the big, heavy betting favorite. So, I mean, I think, you know, if it comes to that kind of game, you know, whoever it is, I think this team on their best day can beat anybody.
Yeah. It's true. And you know, there's a couple of things about it. One is we have a style that hardly anybody else plays. I love that LaPhonso Ellis was saying, what great young guards wouldn't want to come to play up to Auburn and play in that system? And somebody immediately said, oh, they're going to have that playing on the video boards on endless loop every time the recruits come through, you know. But it's style, right? It's hard to prepare for Auburn. It's hard to match up to Auburn the way we play. I mean, even our quote-unquote, like we have big men other than Wiley, but other than Wiley, our big men all shoot three-pointers all the time. It's crazy. And the other thing is, and I never thought I'd say this about Auburn basketball, but it's that depth. I mean, that's what we really leaned on. I was kind of talking about that with my wife, you know, on Sunday you know, most teams that are good have like a really good starting five, and then there's a drop off. And we don't necessarily have like five star starting five. We may have eights across the board, but the thing is, our next five are also eights for the, you know, to a certain degree. And so when we have to go to the bench, there's not that much drop off. And other teams, you know, the other team might get ahead of us because their starting five are slightly better than ours in some areas, not really at guard, but you know what I mean. Certainly in the big men and down low and everything. But then we start bringing in Purifoy. You know, we bring in McLemore or Spencer, whichever one's not starting. We bring in Dunbar if he's not starting. We just keep throwing these bodies out there. You know, our two other guards. McCormick was amazing in the first half. We didn't lose a thing with him out there. I mean, we didn't get, you know, a couple of gigantic half-court three-pointers like Jared attempts every now and then. But other than that, I thought McCormick was fine. I didn't complain a bit. I know that Bruce yelled at him a couple of times, but that was technical stuff that I didn't spot. I can never pronounce number 10. The other guard,
Samir Doughty.
Doughty, yeah. I mean, we have these guys that don't start usually that could be a starting lineup on an SEC team. And so we just keep throwing, you know, we don't throw down a lot of 10s necessarily, although the way some of them are playing, you know. But we don't throw down these Duke All-Americas, but we just keep throwing eights out there. And we just keep throwing eights out there. And I think it takes its toll. Because they play over their heads sometimes. I mean, Dunbar was playing lights out. He's hitting three-pointers. I told my wife, I said, when Malik Dunbar is knocking down three-pointers, you're in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're in good shape when that's happening. And in different games, it's different ones of them. Like one game, you know, McLemore will have a big game. The next game, he won't even score. You know, one game, Jared Harper will have 30. The next, he'll score three. But it just rotates around. Chuma will step up. You know, and he was huge. He gets better every day, doesn't he?
He's amazing. He's really, really coming to his own. I think he has all the ability in the world. It's just about believing that he could do these things against these other players. And I think he's really starting to feel it. You could tell he was feeling it in that game.
Oh, remember I said this before, like a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, I said that the missing piece from this team was that fifth player that you could go to when Jared and Bryce aren't working. And when the down low thing with Wiley or whoever isn't working, you need that one other player that can create a shot. And when Shuma wasn't really imposing himself on the other team, we didn't have that. And that's when we were losing. And I think that there's been several things, but one of the things that changed in the last 2 or 3 weeks that really changed for the better, and I don't think it's a coincidence that that's when we started playing better, is Shuma started asserting himself. Shuma has become what Heron was last year, and I think in some ways more. He doesn't score 25 a game like Heron was doing necessarily, but he blocks shots, and he's a physical presence that Heron wasn't really in most cases. I think that in a different way, he's become that fifth player we needed to fill out that lineup and make us not have a weakness. Yeah. And have somebody to go to who need points, right? He beat Georgia on that last shot. He was killing it against Tennessee. So, yeah, Shuma, amazing. I guess the only players we're going to lose next year, if everybody comes back that can, and we don't know that for sure. Some have said they are and some not. I think the only ones we know for sure that we're losing, right, are Horace Spencer and Bryce Brown. And God, love Bryce Brown. Bryce Brown is one of my all-time favorite Auburn players. He frustrates me to death sometimes because he'll go so cold, but then he gets so hot and you just want to hug him. You know what I mean? He just gets on fire and you just love him. And he plays such great defense. And he's so inspirational. He's the emotional heart of that team in a lot of ways. And I'm so going to miss him. I wish he had another year. But those are the two. I guess are we losing anybody else besides those two?
I don't think so.
If it is, it's not anybody big, right? Not one of the majors. So we'll have back, theoretically, Jared and Shuma and Wiley, hopefully, and Purifoy. And I guess maybe Dunbar is a senior.
He is a senior. Yeah. Dunbar is a senior.
Yeah. So what you got to do is you got to hope you can find a shooting guard that can give you anything like the production that Bryce Brown did. And I don't think
we got some great signees coming in.
Yeah. I don't know if they can, they're not seniors.
But, I know.
But we'll see. Man, I like it when the future is as bright as the present, you know? Oh, man. Okay, well, let me switch gears for just a second. This is an abbreviated show. We got a few more things to talk about. A couple more things to talk about, including football, just very, very briefly. But remember, for just $1 a month or more, we appreciate more, you can help keep shows like this on the air, help keep us doing stuff like this that hopefully you enjoy. We had to do this special show tonight because we were so happy about the big basketball championship. I got to run through quickly our folks that help keep us going, including Brendan O'Dwyer, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Carl Von Drunker, and Phil Amthor, Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harland, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor, David Hegler, Mickey B, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland. I'm having to twist my head around sideways to see this other screen, is why I'm having a hard time with it tonight. Patrick Williams, I'm almost done. Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig. I want this list to be longer, though. Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and our one-time anonymous donors. John, I got to say, I want this list to be longer. I want by football season to have 100 patrons. And I don't just say that without giving you something back, folks. So we've currently, on the Patreon page, we currently have episode 4 of We Believed, which is about the first time ever 1989 Alabama Iron Bowl. And I think I love that episode. I'm so excited about it. And now episode 5, which is about the streak, the 20 games in a row, that amazing 2 years of Florida games, the LSU interception game. That episode 5 has got some fireworks in it. It's the Terry Bowden era, the mid-90s, and we had John's brother Pat come on and talk with us, as well as Cole Kubelik came on and talked about Terry Bowden and playing for Terry Bowden and playing in those games. And he talked about the SEC championship game and Damian Craig, and it's great. There's just some awesome stuff in there. Patrons can listen to that anytime they want, as many times as they want, through the Patreon app or on the Patreon page. If you're not a patron, you got to wait. It'll come out eventually. But this is something I'm trying to reward the people that go out of their way to help us with. And so they're getting to hear it now. And we'll start working on episode 6 soon, which will be the first half of the Tommy Tuberville era. We got other cool stuff. We got a Formula One league going on that's underway now. We got like 16 teams in it, which is awesome. And we've got what else, John, coming up?
We have the basketball picks pool that we're doing for patrons right now. And so if I sent an email to everybody already, you should have gotten an invitation to ESPN to the pool if you're interested. If you have not gotten it already and you're a patron and you are interested, send me an email to aewishbone@gmail.com and we'll take care of it. And
all right.
Then you get to compete against Van and I and make fun of us when you crush us.
And you will, because I'm not good at it, but we'll see. Okay, last thing, we got the bracket coming up. That'll be fun. And then I don't have the soundboard up. I'm not going to worry about it tonight. Do we have any questions?
A couple of quick questions. First from Patrick Williams, who says, should Auburn win Thursday, Auburn's remaining potential opponents line up this way: Kansas, North Carolina, Kentucky, Virginia, Duke. What the hell kind of bracketing is that?
That's the bracket of death, man. That really is the bracket of death. Holy cow.
You know what I say to that, Van?
Bring it on. And not today. What do we say to the bracket of death, John?
Not today.
Not today. Hey, we crossed our podcast streams there for a second. That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's a reference to how we end our Game of Thrones shows.
All right. Two more quick ones.
Yeah.
George Gaston says, so proud of the guys to win the SEC tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Great publicity for the program.
Yes.
Would the boost be tarnished by a first-round loss to New Mexico State? And then how far would the team need to advance in the tournament to get a similar boost to reputation? Past Kansas?
Yeah, that would help. Well, we beat Kansas when we played them the last time we had this matchup. And so it's possible. And I think about that 86 team with Person and Morris and Moore and Frank Ford, they ran over St. John's, UNLV, and Arizona by just playing their hearts out, playing tough, and just manhandling them. And I feel like our particular style this year lends itself to really catching teams by surprise and burying them under threes and stifling them with defense and turning the ball over. I mean, I give us a fighting chance. But no, he makes a good point about, you know, if we go out and lose to a very losable game to New Mexico State, I think we'll still have everything they've accomplished. It'll be kind of like a bittersweet, oh well, at the punctuation at the end. But I don't think anything can take away what they've achieved.
No, nothing is gonna make me forget this weekend at the
right.
basketball.
Oh, just a glorious Auburn weekend.
All right, last question is an email from Pete Cleveland, who says, hey, folks, thanks for the good podcast. In one of your recent episodes, you talked about the time the students carried the goalpost around inside the student section.
That's right.
He says, I was one of those students.
Wow.
It was the 1997 Iron Bowl,
yep.
which was a come-from-behind, last-minute field goal win, so the crowd was really jazzed up at the end of the game. They didn't let any of the fans rush the field because they never did back then, so some of the players tore down the goalposts themselves, the one in front of the student section. A bunch of students were cheering them on, and they started carrying the goalpost around them with them on the field. Eventually, they carried it over to us, and we gladly took it from them and started carrying it up the bleachers toward the top of the lower deck. We heard the PA announcer say something like, please do not throw the goalpost out of the stadium. And we all laughed after that. I don't think any of us had that in mind. And it was funny they suspected we would do that.
Well, that's what I would. That's what I thought. I was there and I didn't even notice it. But my dad, like I said, my dad thought it was, he was both laughing and horrified. He's like, Carl Stevens is saying, please do not throw the goalposts over the stadium. You will kill somebody. Daddy just thought that was hilarious. But we talked about that. Was he saying we talked about it on one of our regular shows or on We Believed? Did you notice?
He just said one of our recent episodes.
Okay, he maybe heard that. Yeah, we definitely, because I just finished editing it last week, you know, and posted it. We definitely, you and me and Pat, we covered that on the Terry Bowden era, We Believe. So if you sign up and get in on that, or if you wait long enough and it'll come through this feed, you'll get to hear that. And I neglected to say, if you want to be a patron and hear stuff like that and join our basketball league and all that, just go to www.auwishbone.com. Okay, that's all you got to do is you go to www.auwishbone.com. There's a link that says become a patron, and it'll all take you from there. Finally, just to a quick note, football practice is underway. I saw some footage from the quarterbacks throwing a little bit today. There were 5 quarterbacks out there, including a Will, W-I-L. I don't remember what his last name is. It wasn't Will Wheaton, but it'd be neat if Will Wheaton was our 5th quarterback. But we had all 5 of them out there were throwing, including Nix, who looked awesome in the number 10. He's got his 10 like his dad. And, of course, the other thing of note was Brandon Marcello quoted Gus more or less as saying that we're going to go back to the no huddle, hurry up. And I'm like, right, because I want to do that. But every year they say that, don't they? And every year.
You have to show us that. It's not tell us.
Every year they say that, and every year we get slower. Remember the year that the poster was Auburn fast, we had like the 3rd slowest offense in college football. That was like 15 or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. So I'd love to see us back in the no huddle hurry up like in the good old days. But and with Gus calling his own plays, he can do that. But it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. It really is going to be interesting to see because we've got the players, we got the defense this time. We don't have any excuses. If he gets back in that 2013 form, it could be a great season. And if he's doing stuff like we did against Texas A&M, where we were pulling the guard and getting sacked every play, then I don't know what I'm going to do. So, well, any thoughts on spring practice before we wrap up?
I mean, the big thing is the quarterback battle. He said they're going to give all 4 of them equal time at the start. And the first, you know, bit of practice and first scrimmages. So we'll see what happens. I mean, there are a couple of guys, you know, Schwartz and Shivers are out for track, I think, and a couple of guys were out injured. Calvin Ashley left the program.
Mm-hmm. And hadn't landed anywhere else, apparently, which is really weird.
No, I think tonight they said he's going to Florida Atlantic or whatever. So,
okay.
But, yeah, it's you know, a couple guys injured and missing spring practice. Jaquan Newkirk, who is a defensive tackle, has a lot of ability. You know, I think, but he's missed his 2nd spring in a row, so that's kind of tough. But yeah. I'm excited to, you know, see what happens and see the young players play and see what happens to the quarterback thing. That's the big thing.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this was a little abbreviated show, but we wanted to get in, especially the basketball, get in a 45-minute look at how things are going. So I'm not even going to do a whole lot of post. We're not going to have a closing credits or anything like that. Again, just go to www.auwishbone.com, sign up, be a patron, or just check out our merchandise or whatever else. John, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.